Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Residual Clauses, Vagueness, and the Sentencing Guidelines Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 6, 2017, the Supreme Court decided Beckles v. United States. Travis Beckles, who had various felony convictions, was subsequently found guilty of being a convicted felon in possession of a firearm. As a result, he was subject to an enhanced sentence under the U.S. Sentencing Guidelines, which deemed him a career offender, whose firearm possession offense constituted a crime of violence. Applying the enhancement, the district court sentenced Beckles to 360 months imprisonment. His conviction and sentence were affirmed on direct appeal, and the Supreme Court denied certiorari. Beckles then sought habeas relief from his enhanced sentence, arguing that his conviction for unlawful possession of a firearm was not a crime of violence, and that therefore he did not qualify as a career offender under the guidelines. The district court denied his petition, and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit again affirmed. Beckles then petitioned the Supreme Court for certiorari, and while his petition was pending, the court decided Johnson v. United States, which held that the residual clause part of the crime of violence definition in the Armed Career Criminal Act, the very same language that was applied to Beckles via the sentencing guidelines, was unconstitutionally vague. The court therefore vacated the judgment in Beckles' case and remanded to the 11th Circuit for further consideration in light of the Johnson decision. On remand, the 11th Circuit again affirmed Beckles' enhanced sentence, reasoning that Johnson simply did not address the sentencing guidelines or related commentary. The Supreme Court then again granted certiorari to resolve a conflict among the courts of appeals on the question whether Johnson's vagueness holding applies to the residual clause in the guidelines. By a vote of 7-0, the Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the 11th Circuit. Justice Thomas delivered the opinion of the court, which held that advisory sentencing guidelines are not subject to a vagueness challenge under the Due Process Clause, and that the guidelines' residual clause is not void for vagueness. Justice Thomas's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Kennedy, Breyer, and Alito. Justice Kennedy also filed a concurring opinion. Justices Ginsburg and Sotomayor filed opinions concurring in the judgment. Justice Kagan took no part in the consideration or decision of this case. To discuss the case, we have Carissa Hessick, who is the Ann Shea Ransdell and William Garland Buck Ransdell Jr., Distinguished Professor of Law at the University of North Carolina School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Hessick.
Now, in order to understand how the U.S. Supreme Court decided the Beckles case, it's necessary to first spend a couple of minutes talking about a case that was decided in 2015 called Johnson versus United States. In Johnson versus United States, the U.S. Supreme Court held that a particular piece of a federal criminal statute was unconstitutionally vague. Now, the Supreme Court says that vague criminal statutes violate the Due Process Clause because they don't give the public sufficient notice about what activity is prohibited and how much they'll be punished for that activity, and because vague statutes can lead to arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement. The statute at issue in Johnson involved mandatory minimum sentences for certain people who illegally possessed firearms. The Supreme Court said that one particular portion of the statute that imposed the mandatory minimum sentence was unconstitutionally vague, it wasn't sufficiently precise, and therefore it was struck down. Now, it's important to understand what Johnson was about because Beckles was really just a question about how to apply Johnson. Beckles involved some language from the federal sentencing guidelines that was identical to the language that had been found unconstitutionally vague in Johnson. So the question presented in Beckles, or one of the questions presented in Beckles, was whether the federal sentencing guidelines could be subject to a vagueness challenge. What was interesting was that in the wake of Johnson, the U.S. government had conceded in courts across the country that this federal sentencing guidelines that had the same identical language was unconstitutionally vague. And so Most courts just accepted this concession from the government. Some courts actually went through the process of doing their own analysis and agreed with the government that the federal sentencing guidelines were subject to a vagueness challenge, and therefore that this vague guideline was also unconstitutional. But the 11th Circuit decided not to accept the concession by the U.S. government and instead said that the federal sentencing guidelines are not subject to a vagueness challenge. This was in a couple of cases, including the case involving Beckles. So Beckles petitioned the Supreme Court. The petition was for certiorari. The petition was granted, and the Supreme Court appointed an amicus to defend the judgment below because the federal government was arguing that the vagueness doctrine did, in fact, apply to the federal sentencing guidelines. And although there were a couple of other questions presented in the case, the court ended up agreeing with the 11th Circuit that the guidelines weren't subject to a vagueness challenge, and therefore the other questions presented ended up not mattering. Now, to understand why it was that the court decided in Beckles not to allow vagueness challenges to the federal sentencing guidelines, it's important to first understand exactly what the federal sentencing guidelines are. Back in the 1980s, Congress decided that federal judges had too much discretion, too much power or authority in selecting sentences in individual cases. And that's because when Congress passed criminal laws, it gave broad authority to judges in the form of wide statutory sentencing ranges. But rather than going back and changing those statutes, Congress instead decided to create an agency, the Sentencing Commission, to write guidelines, which were essentially mandatory rules that told judges that they had to engage in different sorts of fact-finding. And depending on that fact-finding, they then had to engage in various calculations, and the calculations would lead them to a narrower range within the broad statutory range that they were permitted to sentence within. So in effect, the federal sentencing guidelines took away a lot of discretion from judges based on these rules requiring factual findings. Now, in 2005, the U.S. Supreme Court held the federal sentencing guidelines unconstitutional. It said that these factual findings infringed on the authority of juries, but rather than saying that juries had to do all of the factual findings required by the federal sentencing guidelines, instead what the Supreme Court did was it said that these guidelines were now just advisory. Beckles is really, in some ways, a case about what it means to have advisory federal sentencing guidelines than it is a case about the vagueness doctrine. And that's because, in some ways, the Beckles majority, which was written by Justice Thomas, didn't spend much time talking about notice or arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement on their own terms. Instead, what Justice Thomas's opinion did was it said, we all agree that the old pre-guideline system of broad sentencing authority to judges is constitutional, and broad sentencing authority to individual judges provides less notice and likely provides more opportunity for arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement than do advisory guidelines. And so essentially what Justice Thomas's opinion concluded was, because the parties all agreed that the pre-guideline system was constitutional, the advisory guideline system must also be constitutional. Now, what's interesting about this opinion from Justice Thomas is that there's been some disagreement since 2005 about what precisely it means to have an advisory guideline system. And the Supreme Court has had to issue a number of opinions trying to clarify this issue. They've said that the guidelines can't be totally ignored by district court judges when they're imposing sentence. They still have to do all of the factual findings and engage in all of the calculations to reach this narrower guideline sentencing range. But they've also suggested that judges do have discretion to disagree with that range, but that discretion is limited by the fact that those sentencing decisions have to be explained and that they're subject to appellate review. So it's a little unclear, frankly, how much discretion judges have in this advisory sentencing guideline system, and in light of how much discretion they may or may not have, how precisely to deal with various procedural rights issues that come up at sentencing. And in a couple of relatively recent cases, the Supreme Court suggested that judges will, in most cases, simply follow the guidelines, and their own discretion won't really come into it. In a case called Pew, the Supreme Court said this. That was decided, I believe, in 2013. Then, more recently, in a case called Molina Martinez. Now, what's interesting about this is Justice Thomas really didn't agree with those cases. He dissented in Pew, and he concurred only in the judgment in Molina Martinez. But now, in writing the majority opinion for Beckles, he characterized the advisory guidelines as much gentler checks on district court discretion. In fact, to read the Beckles opinion, you'd think that the guidelines are nothing more than a procedural hurdle for judges to clear before entering sentence. In fact, Justice Thomas characterizes the guidelines as something that judges rely on merely for advice. And in making these characterizations about the guidelines, Justice Thomas actually relies on a line from his dissent in the Pew case. So it's possible that Beckles versus United States represents a bit of a turning point, or maybe just another turn in the path about what the Supreme Court's doing with their advisory guideline system. Turning back to the vagueness question just for a minute, one might conclude that in the wake of Beckles, everyone who was sentenced under this guideline that involved the language that was vague from Johnson versus United States, we might assume that all of those defendants have absolutely no recourse. But it's not so clear that that's the case. Again, because Justice Thomas wrote this opinion in a way that focused on the advisory nature of the guidelines, there's a real question about whether defendants who were sentenced under this guideline before 2005, that is to say, back when the guidelines were still mandatory, whether they should be able to get relief right now. Now, the Beckles opinion obviously didn't address this. Justice Sotomayor, in a concurrence that she wrote, made a point of saying that the opinion doesn't address this. And there are currently some pending cases where defendants who were sentenced before 2005 under this guidelines are challenging their sentence. And frankly, because this guideline resulted in such long sentences, there are probably a relatively significant number of people who are still in prison who were sentenced before 2005 under this guideline. But the Beckles case also creates another odd situation, and that's the fact that the circuits haven't always been consistent in how they've treated the federal sentencing guidelines. In fact, in the years since 2005, when the Supreme Court has had to issue a series of later decisions clarifying what it meant by advisory guideline system, those decisions often came in the form of reversals from circuit court decisions that weren't giving enough discretion to sentencing guidelines. And this particular guideline with the vague language, was one that created a bit of controversy in the circuits. In particular, this guideline created a controversy because some circuits told lower court judges that they were not free to sentence outside of this guideline based only on policy disagreement with the guideline. That is to say, they were telling lower court judges that they had to identify some unique facts about this particular defendant the particular defendant's case that made them unique and different than other defendants. Now, those holdings from those circuits don't seem to match up with Justice Thomas's analysis about guidelines that exist that are relied on merely for advice. And so it's possible that defendants who were sentenced in the First Circuit, the Seventh Circuit, and the Fourth Circuit under those sorts of rules, that they too could say that the Beckles case doesn't govern their claim because the analysis from Beckles simply doesn't apply to guidelines that are not truly advisory. In any event, I expect to see some more litigation in the circuits about the meaning of Beckles, and I expect to see continuing litigation before the U.S. Supreme Court over what precisely advisory guidelines mean and how advisory guidelines affect various rights of criminal defendants.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.fedsoc.org/multimedia.